Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to this edition of Blog Business Success here on Blog Talk Radio. And I'm your host, Wayne Hurlburt. And tonight our guest is John Buck. And he's a dynamic self-governance expert. He's the CEO of the Sociocracy Consulting Group, and he's an associate at Creative Learning Solutions. And he's also the co-author of the revolutionary and thought-provoking book, We the People, Consenting to a Deeper Democracy, a Guide to Sociocratic Principles and Methods. And John Buck describes the concept of dynamic self-governance for any workplace, government, or organization. And John Buck provides the foundations of sociocratic principles and practices to provide for more inclusive and collaborative leadership and decision making. And John Buck also provides the background to organizing an organization sociocratically and offers the science behind the methods and how they work for all. And John presents the methods for bringing more inclusive values and governance to any organization. And he also shares why the improved model provides greater overall benefits to everyone, both within and outside the organization. John Buck, as I mentioned, is an associate of the Creative Learning Solutions organization, and he has extensive leadership experience in governments and with corporations. Welcome to our show, John.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm looking forward to our conversation as well. And what was the background to writing this book, We the People, Consenting to a Deeper Democracy?
Well, it was a bit of a personal journey, I guess. I got a job right out of college as a technical writer at Boeing down in Seattle. And as jobs go, it was a pretty good job. I liked my boss and the coworkers were great, and I learned a lot, and my pay was fair, no problem there. And yet I remember my inside sort of like getting all bent out of shape, sort of shattering, as it became clear to me, or it dawned on me, that all the adults around me had been lying to me all my life, in that they had been telling me I was living in a democracy. And there I was at work, and I was spending most of my waking hours in something that was not a democracy. It was a feudal hierarchy. There was the Duke of Administration and the Baron of Operations, and there was the King of the Company, and I was a serf. And it really, really bothered me. And somehow it hadn't hit me before actually working there that this was the situation. I realized that I could vote for the mayor of Seattle, but I couldn't vote for any of my bosses. And I thought about this, and I remembered from my history that Abraham Lincoln had been, back in the 1840s, well before he was a president, had been elected by the men, the soldiers, as captain of their National Guard unit when they went off to fight in the Black Hawk War, which was an Indian war, First Nations for the Canadians. And I said, well, that's interesting. Soldiers never elect their officers anymore. How come? What happened? And I started searching for an answer, I looked for a long time. I eventually went on to be in a management intern program in the federal government back in Washington, and I got lots of classes that I could take. I took this one and that one, and I couldn't find anybody that was running a company democratically, and had about given up on it till I was in Holland. And I was in Holland to give a speech on computer-based training. I became an expert in computer-based training. And the people I was staying with listened to me railing about how nobody had solved this problem, and they said, oh, it's been solved. Go down to Rotterdam and see Gerard Endenburg. And I went down there, and I had done enough research that within a half an hour I could see, wow, this was something brand new. This is very rare in the history of ideas or in management theory. He had something invented really new. And so then I started going back to Holland and learning more about it, and I learned some Dutch so I could translate the materials from Dutch, because there wasn't much in English back then. And so I just kept getting more and more interested in it and learning more about it. I was the first person to be certified by the Dutch Center that was a non-Dutch person. And that's how it got going.
Well, that's a very fascinating background, and the book points to some challenges in how people govern themselves in all aspects of their lives. What are some of the challenges that people have in getting their voices heard? As you mentioned, the organizations tend to be very often little kingdoms, and the people are considered to be serfs. How can that be changed?
Well, first of all, you asked the question about what are the challenges people themselves actually face. And basically, the structure that we use, whether it's a corporation or whether it's a nonprofit business, it doesn't matter. People are organized in this top-down hierarchy, in this feudal hierarchy. It's the hierarchy that's been around since the time of the pharaohs, at least. And in this structure has a really big problem, and that is that it makes it okay for the boss to ignore the worker. If the worker has something, or the subordinate has something to say, the boss can say, oh, thank you very much for your opinion, and I'll do something with it or not, depending upon what I want to do. There's no idea of something being collaborative in a wired-in way, in a hardwired way. So, for instance, I've had, just in the last 2 or 3 weeks, I've had 3 different people tell me about how they've tried to make a suggestion at work, or the boss is targeting them somehow. I know someone, a good friend, who excellent work record, been with a company for 15 years, actually once worked for me, a fine worker, is now for some reason being targeted by the current boss. And just the things that are going on are nonsense. I'm wondering if there's racial prejudice going on and so forth. She has no recourse without going into an elaborate process, maybe of a lawsuit or filing formal complaints. There's no way that the boss has to listen to her. And that's the reality of a lot of people. They just come in, they do what they're told, and they go home, and they're not really respected as people. And that's a pervasive problem because of the structure.
And that's something that you're recommending the changes. And so in to make that change, you're presenting the concept of sociocratic principles. What exactly is sociocracy and the sociocratic principles that you're describing?
Well, I'll go back to the story of how I ran into Gerard Endenburg down in Holland and what it is that he had come up with. Gerard Endenburg, the company that I visited is called Endenburg Electrotechnique. It was owned originally by Gerard Endenburg's family, and they had set the company up to be a heavy electrical company. The company is still alive today and thriving. They wire up oil rigs. They wire up big buildings. They do real work. But the family also said, we want this company to be our management laboratory. We want to try out our ideas and try to come up with a more egalitarian workplace. And the parents worked on it for a while, and then they convinced Gerard, their son, to take over the experiment. And Gerard brought a lot to it. Gerard, if you've ever used a cell phone, the flat speaker in that cell phone was an invention that Gerard helped Philips get when he was a young man. He's an electrical genius. And he knew at that time, back in the 60s and early 70s, he knew about the new science of cybernetics, which had been invented by Albert Wiener during World War II. And that's the science of how you steer and control systems. So Gerard knew all about power, and he knew a lot about cybernetics. And when his parents asked him to take over the experiment of running the company in new ways, he looked at this hierarchy, this power hierarchy, which goes from the top to the bottom, and he said, I would never design an electrical circuit that way. It has no feedback loop. And so he said, what we need is a hardwired feedback loop, that the boss can't ignore the feedback. And he then set about to think through, how do we make that happen? And so his first principle was that what you do is, in order to have a feedback loop that you can't ignore, is to every few weeks, 2 to 4 weeks, you break down that hierarchy and everybody sits in a circle physically. and they have the rules be such that the circle is saying, gee, how are we working together? What are our policies working like? How effective are we being? And making a decision by the second principle, which is called consent. So that means that when you're having a circle meeting, the boss is not in charge anymore. The boss is still the boss. But the rule is that you're making decisions by consent. Everybody has to have no reasoned and paramount objection, which is what consent is. So that's the second principle. And this gives you a way of forcing in a feedback loop that the boss cannot ignore. And then the third principle is one that is unique to any management system I've ever seen, and that's called double linking. Gerard said, fine, we have a boss and some workers, but that boss has a boss, and what do we do about that? So he said, we have to have a circle that's higher up in the hierarchy, and that will consist of the boss and the boss's peers and the boss's boss. And he said, what we need to have is the lower level circles elect a representative to go sit with the other bosses so that there is a second person, the person who's carrying the voice upwards in the hierarchy. And that person is there with full consent. And now we have a voice from below that cannot be ignored. The largest organizations that work this way are about 2,000 people, so they have several levels of circles going up, and it works. The voice from the bottom goes to the top. So those are the three principles. The fact that you create a hardwired feedback loop with a circle, a periodic circle meeting, and in that circle meeting you make decisions by consent, not consensus. They're quite different. And then you connect these circles as you go up the hierarchy. You have circles so that, in fact, in one sense, everybody is together in the company in one big circle, but you handle the large numbers by only having representatives go up at the higher levels.
What's really interesting about the circle concept is that I utilized that concept myself when I was managing, especially back in the 90s. It was something that I always did. We would sit in a circle and we would decide upon ideas, but it was more consensus, as you say, than consent. So it was a slightly different concept, but I sort of borrowed mine from the King Arthur stories where all were equal around the table.
Yeah.
And that was something I applied there for decision making and creating new ideas, but it was done slightly differently from what you're talking about. In fact, you're moving it a level higher, especially when you also are taking the circles to higher levels of the organization as well.
Well, I can tell a story. Gerard had this system going for a few years, and then suddenly something happened that proved to him that he really had something new. What happened was that the Japanese ran the Dutch shipping industry out of business. This was in the early 80s. And a lot of the workers in the company were overworking wiring up ships. And suddenly a quarter of the company had no work. So the board of directors, or Gerard likes to call it the top circle, decided that they better have a layoff. In Holland, you have to go through a few hoops. It's not like in the U.S. where you can just do it. And so they started the process of having a layoff. In the meanwhile, there was a man who was a machinist. He was responsible for making specialized heavy cabinets, you know, that would fit in an odd corner of a ship or a building. And so he was not in the shipping department per se. He was just one of the workers. And he said to himself, you know, I have an idea here. He said, I know the company has a big reserve fund, and it's for emergencies, and it seems to me like this is an emergency. So I think what we should do is not lay off these ship workers. We ought to bring them in, clean them up, clean their fingernails, put the coat and tie on them, teach them a little bit about marketing, and send them out. He said, they'll be perfect because they know all about the technology. And so what he did is he called an emergency meeting of his immediate circle. And he explained the idea to them, and they said, oh, you know, we like this idea. We already have a representative to the general circle, the next higher one up, but we're going to add you as another representative. This is all very flexible. You take this idea up there and you tell them about it. So that's what he did. Next day he called an emergency meeting of the general circle. This was the manager of the company and, you know, all the managers and their representatives. And they said, what's this about an emergency meeting? And he told them the idea, and they said, we like this idea. Here's some changes we want to make, but that we want you, we're electing you as our representative up to the board of directors for this issue, or you're our second representative. And so he went up there, and they I think they were having a meeting fairly soon after that. And there were some of the people on the board of directors who were quite upset at having a man in there in a mechanic suit sitting in the board of directors meeting, and they walked out. But most of the directors stayed, and they listened, and they made a few more changes, and they basically accepted the guy's idea. And lo and behold, within a couple of months, the company was completely restored. They didn't have to do a layoff. They had lots of new business coming in, and his leadership had saved the day, kept the company from having to shrink down. And at that point, Gerard said, I have something new. I have a structure that allows leadership to come from anywhere in the company. This is real.
Well, I agree with that completely. In fact, I've always said that the best ideas come from the places and the people in the organization where they're least expected. In fact, the people closest to the action are the ones most likely to have the most reasonable and effective solutions.
Right, and we're not organized to be able to listen to them. I think everybody listening probably has the experience of some thought or idea they have being ignored.
Yes, in fact, the most logical and effective ideas are often ignored, and there will be some idea will come down from above that will be something that simply makes the problem even worse.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you're not able to say, no, that's not right.
That's right, and that's one of the problems that organizations have is that command and control model that you're
right.
trying to work around here. And
mm-hmm.
one of the concepts that you propose is rewiring that institutional power. How can that be achieved?
Well, you do that through feedback loops. The circle meeting is a kind of feedback loop. There's another whole concept of how you lay out your work. Everything you do, you want to have feedback around it, and so that you actually start building a very elegant organization when you're into these principles. It makes a continuous development kind of just what happens every day. Feedback system means that when some leaders hear about this, when some people first hear about it, the leader will say, are you asking me to give up my power? And I myself have been a manager, managed lots of people, and if somebody walked in my office and said, oh, John, would you like to share some of your power? I would say, the door's over there, goodbye. I'm not interested in sharing my power. I'd like my power. What I would be interested in is what sociocracy said, which is, what if I showed you how to create a process that can think smarter than you can? Now I'm interested. Oh, I can do something that thinks smarter than I can. And that you get by getting a feedback loop, because the feedback helps you see your blind spots. Everybody has blind spots. And the interesting thing about our minds is that when we have a blind spot, and you can see this literally, actually, if you cover one eye and, you know, you try to look at a dot and put your blind spot on your eye on it, you don't see a hole in the world. Your eye fills in something and invents reality. And that happens in your line of thinking. There'll be holes in there, and you'll just kind of think, well, I understand what's going on. So that's a blind spot. And the feedback enables you to see what you're not seeing. And that's the most important thing for you to be able to understand, is that you're not seeing something. And that's what makes you able to think smarter. Other people can help fill in your blind spots. So that's what's being offered, is not a giving up of power or sharing of power, but rather sharing leadership. They're different.
And much of today's real decision-making is very centralized or set up to exclude many voices, as we've been discussing. Will this circle arrangement and feedback change how decision-making is done to make it more inclusive?
Yeah, what happens with when you're running a sociocratic circle meeting is you're actually creating a system for self-organization to happen. And self-organization is a very interesting phenomenon. Some people have heard of the technique called open space that uses self-organization. But self-organizing systems are much more able to deal with complexity and ambiguity and uncertain situations than a logical command and control system is able to do. So by getting together, I've seen it happen again and again. A bunch of people that are following the process, they go around, they listen to each other. If there's a paramount objection, they listen very carefully to it to try to understand it and incorporate it. And when you have that happening, it's amazing how quickly people can come up with solutions to problems that they might have otherwise been wrestling with for months. So that self-organization process, the creating a structure for chaos to self-organize, is the very powerful methodology of decision-making that we bring to this to an organization.
And, of course, that leads to new leadership strategies. What would these new strategies look like?
Well, yeah, that's interesting. First, I've mentioned already that a leader will want to look at leadership as something sort of like handing bread around at the table. Leadership can be handed around. Anybody can hold it. And enabling people to do that leadership is one new thing that a leader would want to be doing. A number of my clients have said something along the line of, gosh, now that we have sociocracy or dynamic governance in place, I don't manage the organization anymore. I just steer the creativity. And so knowing that people are going to now be taking initiative and being very creative means that you don't have to motivate them. You don't have to get them going. If anything, you have to guide all the great thinking that happens. There are other interesting implications. One is that we, in being raised around or being around a command and control, a predict and control type of a situation, we get our sense of security by what I call the Chinese wall phenomena or the tree hugging phenomena. If it's anchored firmly in the ground and we can lean against it, then we feel secure. And in fact, the world really isn't that way. The world is very dynamic. That's why we call it dynamic governance. Things are always changing. And so really your security comes from being able to steer well, to be able to deal with unexpected events. And so normally a leader is told, be strong. Everybody will look up to you if you're a strong leader. But with sociocracy, a leader needs also to be able to say, I'm not certain. There are some things here I'm not sure how to steer around, and I need some help. And suddenly everybody is there to help you. You become much more powerful by being uncertain. And so the whole sense of security that you're able to create is different. So those are three different ways that leadership seems to change in a dynamically structured situation.
Many organizational leaders will say that their system that they have in place now is very strong and that their strengths are all being utilized effectively. But as you say, there's definitely room for an improvement, and I've always maintained that the command-control model is actually not a very strong one at all, and today's economy is actually a weak one. How can current organizational strengths be better organized to strengthen them through the use and implementation and taking advantage of those other voices with more ideas?
Yeah, it's actually a very gentle process to bring in a circle structure. What you do is you simply get an implementation group together, maybe from different levels of the organization, and you start overlaying circles. Wherever you have a boss and people reporting to a boss, you can have a circle. And over time, and gaining experience as you go, you overlay circles on your current hierarchy. It can be, in doing the analysis of what works and what doesn't, you say, oh, why are we organized that way to begin with? We could maybe organize in a different, more simple way or a more effective way. But basically, you may make some changes like that at the beginning, but basically what you do is you bring in the circle structure, and then the circles start evolving the organization after that. Go ahead.
Yes, that creates a real opportunity to make some basic changes that everyone can be comfortable with from the beginning by introducing the circle concept and getting everyone used to that concept from the very beginning, so that it's not all that disruptive, because the last thing that people want to have is to be disrupted, especially when change is usually not very well explained to them as to why it's happening.
Mm-hmm. The reality is that people have all sorts of different, primarily emotional reactions to a circle structure coming in. Some people get very nervous because they're used to the boss playing this trick and that trick, or having the latest thing that they do, and they can see through the trick. Oh, this is, you know, it's still the same old autocratic boss, and he's calling us associates rather than employees now. So we're all associates. Great. They see through the trick, and they're comfortable because they know the boss's trick. They can make the boss happy and just go on. With this, it's not that people are saying, wait a minute, we know the boss likes to play tricks, but we don't see the trick here. That makes us nervous. So I say that this whole system is a trick for everybody. There are people who've been in abusive employer situations that are very nervous and they get very frightened. What do you mean you want me to talk? And what do you mean that I can tell my real opinion and not get in trouble for it? I saw this really beautifully, an example of this one time when I was working with a friend who had taken over an assisted living house. It was a small residential care facility in Vermont. And she didn't realize when she bought it that it had been an abusive employer situation, and the staff was just very passive aggressive, and we had some circle meetings, and it was mostly women who were the employees, would sit there with their arms folded, sort of looking at her, and would hardly participate. And finally, one day, one of the women held up a towel, and the towel was threadbare. It was just not a very good towel. And she said, we need new linen in this place. And, of course, my friend had been waiting for something like that. And she said, my goodness, I didn't realize that. Thank you. We'll buy some new towels. And everybody had been expecting her to get fired right then on the spot for mouthing off to the boss. So over time, gradually people started to realize they could participate more. And within the next year and a half, they started winning state awards for the quality of service. It proceeded over time, and it proceeded in the reality. One of the problems that they then ran into was that the workers, the women, became so used to being respected and heard that they ran into trouble at home where they might be in abusive marriage situations. And so there was a lot of them having trouble with the disconnect between being respected at work and not at home. So it's very complicated. The current structure system that we have infiltrates every bit of our lives. And none of this is as straightforward, as simple as you might like to see it from the theory, but it does work.
One of the aspects that I find really fascinating is how the circle idea engages everyone in the process and in the ideas. I've always maintained that a person helps their staff and everyone in the organization create ideas, that they will work harder to making those ideas work, because after all, it was them that came up with the idea and it was their idea in the first place, and so they'll want to see it succeed, so they'll do everything they can to help it succeed.
Right.
They'll be very happy because they were listened to.
Yeah, that's very powerful. One of the things we do in a circle meeting is, back up a little bit. I said that circle meetings help self-organization happen. And since the mid-1980s, we've actually some Nobel Peace Prizes were awarded for people who were helping us understand what self-organization is all about. And it turns out that there's two really basic principles. If you have a system in which all the elements of the system are more or less equal to each other, and you have an outside force, then the elements of the system will align, they'll self-organize, they'll synchronize. And so you see this, a simple example is on the bottom of a creek bed, a sandy creek bed. The water running down the creek is the outside force, and the grains of sand are all more or less equal to each other, so they'll self-organize into ripples. Or in a laser, you have a bunch of molecules running around in a glass tube, and you zap them with electricity, and if they're the right ones, then they'll start emitting light in a coherent way. With people, it's the same thing. You have to make everybody be equal in the circle meeting. And the outside force is that we've got to get the job done. This is the aim or the purpose of our circle. And so some of the things we do to help keep people be equal is to, rather than just allow people to talk when they want, although you can do that on certain times, normally we will go around. And that way, each person in the circle has a guaranteed time to talk. They don't have to fight for the floor. And it's expected that we want to hear from you, whether you're a loud, boisterous person or you're a soft person who hardly ever speaks. You will have your time to talk. And just that simple method brings out a lot of thoughts that you never would get otherwise if you're just letting people chatter away and letting the bigger personalities dominate and make things unequal.
Yes, that's absolutely right. We've all been in meetings in the past where two or three people will dominate the entire conversation, and very often their ideas will be ones that we've heard, we've tried, and so on. And there are other people who you know have good ideas, but they just don't speak up because the minute they do, for some reason, they get cut off, they'll get talked mm-hmm. down, shouted down, and so they just don't speak at all. And with the circle concept of egalitarianism in the approach, and also with the guarantee that everyone has time to speak, that removes that dangerous dynamic of the dominant personalities controlling the entire meeting and agenda, and the people that are less likely to speak up are just simply not heard.
Right. Right. Yeah. It when you're first learning it, it seems like a little bit formal or a little bit kind of like stiff or something. That's the initial feeling a lot of people get. But after you've used it a little bit, almost everybody says, I don't like the old way of meeting. I much prefer around. Let's do around so that we're not riding over each people. I want to hear each person's thought. And so then it becomes the natural thing to do.
Yes, it's different from the classroom-type structure that most meetings are placed in. Instead,
right.
It changes it, and as I always like to say, it worked well for King Arthur, so why not try it? And that's coming at it from an entirely different direction from what you're doing, but the idea was much the same, and because it gave everybody an opportunity to speak, we just passed along from person to person.
Right.
With discussion, and everyone had ideas, and but of course, we as I pointed out earlier, we dealt with consensus rather than consent, and as you say, those are two very different concepts.
Yeah, it's interesting. The people at the top of any organization, or the good old boys or whatever, tend to sit around in a circle and tend to talk and tend to be fairly respectful to each other and listen. And be pretty inclusive, the kind of round table sort of a thing. The elite does that, but normally they don't want to tolerate that from the people who are not in the elite. And what this says is no, you need everybody with a voice, and so let's bring in some representatives from the people who aren't the elite, and you need to listen to them.
Yes, it also enhances the idea of diversity within the organization as well, because people who may shy away from certain organizations because of its hierarchical structure and an unwelcoming atmosphere for diversity would be changing to organizations that appreciate people from different backgrounds, different walks of life,
right.
different national backgrounds, different orientations, and so on. So you have all sorts of different voices, as opposed to everybody went to the same universities, everybody's roughly the same age, same background, and strangely, their ideas are all the same in their groupthink.
Yeah.
And it's definitely offering an opportunity for more diversity. But how can the right people be put into decision-making positions that are more inclusive? How can circles be expanded upward through elections of people? How can that be implemented within an organization, especially where the organization simply points to their groomed candidates, and that's who it will be regardless?
Well, as you remember, my original motivation for doing all this is I wanted to be able to vote for my boss. And this dynamic governance system allows that to happen in a really neat way. When you're electing somebody, you do it through consent decision-making. And it brings in all this stuff of making everybody be equivalent and creating a little bit of chaos and watching it self-organize. So I'll try to give the listeners a little bit of a feel for this. I'm going to go into a little bit of detail on the procedures so that you can understand this. Is that okay?
Yes, that would be great. Yes.
Okay.
You.
So let's say that we are we can be electing somebody to take on a job, to take on some new project. So you can elect people for many things. But let's say that we're electing one of these representatives. So it's important that the boss is there and all the people that work for the boss in the circle are there because they're in a circle meeting now. And you have somebody leading the election who's been elected to be a facilitator, so it may or may not be the boss running the meeting. It's somebody who has good facilitation skills. And let's say that you have a facilitator now leading the election for who is going to be the representative. Step one is to consider what the job is and how long the person is going to be in the job, like a year, and what their responsibilities are and kind of what the qualifications are. And for a representative, one of the qualifications is that they have good judgment, that they're able to speak well, that they're able to speak well not only about the kind of work that everybody's doing, but also able to handle the next higher level of abstraction. That's why you have a hierarchy, is because work happens in different levels of abstraction. So can the person, is the person conversant with the kind of language that will be used at the next higher level? And, of course, and there's going to be no perfect candidate also. That's a given to begin with. And so after you've just gone over the job description, then the facilitator says, all right, everybody fill out a piece of paper. You can have a pre-printed form or not. And on this piece of paper, you write, I, John, nominate, and then the name of the person that you nominate. So I might nominate you, Wayne, or I might nominate myself or somebody else, or I might abstain, but I put that down, and I don't tell anybody else about it. I hand that in to the facilitator. And that's really important because you're actually creating a little bit of chaos now. Everybody's equal in this. You don't know what the other people have put in. You want all the ideas. And so then the facilitator will pick up each slip of paper that's in front of him or her and say, oh, John, you voted for Wayne. Why did you vote for Wayne? And then I will say, well, I think Wayne is very articulate. I remember how he was dealing with the boss in the other unit over there one time and explaining a problem we had, and he just, you know, he was very good about it, and he really listens to me. So I would like to be represented by Wayne. And we might go to you, and you might say, well, I vote for myself also because blah, 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 whatever. And we might go over and Susie would vote for George and so on. And the facilitator might make little piles of who's voted for whom and might make notes about what some of the key reasons were, because we're electing by argument, not by number. And when we've been around on that, then the facilitator would say, okay, now that we've heard these arguments, I'm going to go ask each person whether you want to change your nomination based on the arguments that you heard. And it's amazing how often people will change, they will hear reasoning that they like, and they'll start to, there'll be a movement towards somebody. That's the self-organizing happen. And so there's reasons given, and it may go this way or that way. It's always unpredictable. But then there's this round in which people change their mind or not, depending upon the arguments that they heard. And at this point, then the facilitator, having listened to all the arguments, can say, well, I think I'm going to propose so-and-so. And if he's not sure, he could ask somebody else to make a proposal. It doesn't matter. But the key thing is that we want to hear, why is it that you proposed this person? What are the arguments? And it can be that the facilitator, although somebody got 6 votes, might propose somebody who got 4 votes because he really thought the reasoning was very good, that the arguments were very good for this person. He would take into account as one of the factors that there was maybe 6 for this other person, but it might still go for 4, for the person with 4. And he would then say, well, I propose that it's Wayne. And he would go around to Susie and George, do you have any objection to this, any paramount objection? No, no. Goes to John Buck. Goes to himself. No, I don't have it. John Buck doesn't have a paramount objection. And then we go to you. And so you are the last one we ask. You need to hear all this, all the thoughts everybody has. And you might say, well, I've got an objection to me because I'm going to be on a trip for 2 months. And so I can't perform this function. And at that point, we would try to think, well, what can we do about this objection? We might, the facilitator might say, well, we already have a representative. Why don't we have the representative be in their term 2 more months and then you take over? Would that do it? You say, oh, yes, that would remove my objection. And so then we've made the decision. And that process then is how the representative gets elected to the next higher circle. Let's say that the boss resigns, leaves, goes to another job, gets promoted, whatever. Now in the higher circle, the higher circle is responsible for figuring out who the new boss is going to be. That's the top-down part of it. And they might go through a hiring process, or they might just have an election like we just talked about. There's various ways. But in the end, the person who's the representative from the lower circle gets to consent to who the boss is going to be. And therefore, their voice is not ignored. And that's how you can have a voice in who your boss is. It's through your representative.
And so the double process that you're talking about, where you take the first a journey around the circle and have the nominations, and then the second trip around the circle to have the opportunity to change your nomination if you so choose. What that does, I can see it, the first nomination process being one where people will likely steer towards the expected person that's probably the golden person within the organization, even though they may not like them. They also know that from those above seem to think that this person, for reasons that are completely unknown or beyond the understanding of anyone in the organization, is somehow chosen. But they'll select them. But as they go around the circle, they'll probably think maybe it's time to consider the person that we really want. And one of the interesting things about groups is they tend to know who should be their leader. I've been in many groups where people will say, you know, this person would be the best leader for us. And they can decide it amongst themselves, which is something that has always been a dynamic that is always interesting to me, especially when command and control model would pick someone else for reasons that I never really understood why you would pick that person. Why them?
I can tell you an example an example of everybody knowing who's the real leader. There's a company that was handled by a friend of mine in Quebec. And this company in Quebec has a business of repairing heavy machinery, diesel engines and diggers, all that kind of thing. And it had been a family business, and they went to the sociocratic structure. And there was 3 levels of circles, I think. And there was a certain engineer who wasn't even supervisory, who got elected first to his intermediate level and to the general circle and then to the board of directors as the rep from the general circle. And so he was in 3 levels. And everybody fought the world at this person. And when the president decided that it was time to retire and they started looking for a replacement, everybody said, we have him. He's right there. We know he can do a good job of leading. So they then had that person go through an executive training program with the president and made a nice, smooth transition. So the electing representatives is a wonderful way of identifying the next crop of managers.
And that's, of course, a different way of approaching the circumstances than is the usual method, where the command and control model picks the leaders, even though the people within the organization know who the best leaders would be. How can work be better organized to achieve sociocratic goals? We know that, as you've been talking, that the organization is often structured hierarchically, but how can the work within it be organized better?
Yeah, the hierarchy is not bad. As I said, work happens in different levels of abstraction, and you can't do anything about that. That's just, and you need to be able to assign people to different levels of abstraction. Because they take different kinds of specialty. And so that's just the way work is. So a hierarchy is natural. That's what work is like. And there's a whole other set of tools that I haven't really addressed here. We've talked about how important feedback is. Well, it's not just between the circles, but every piece of work you do ought to have a feedback loop. And this was invented by an engineer. So he said, you know, we want to have a continuous improvement process so that the circle have something to meet about. And let's articulate what that is. So there's a concept called input, transformation, and output. That's an engineering term. And any workflow you have, any process can be analyzed in those terms. And then, and maybe you have 50, 100 steps or whatever, but you can use that as a helpful way of identifying what they are. Then every step you have should have a policy or a leading about how it's done. And then, and this is what's not in most work structures, you should have a measurement that you know how it is that, how well that policy is working. So, for example, if you have a store, you ought to have a policy in place that every customer that comes in, you ask them, how did you find out about us? So that if you have a policy of spending so much money on the newspaper and so much money on Facebook and so much money in going out and schmoozing at the local Rotary Club, you can see then, well, gee, we're getting most of the people through the Internet. Why are we paying all the money to the newspaper? And you have a feedback loop that lets you refine your policy. And you need that for every step of the way, from getting customers in the door to how did our billing process work and everything in between. And I remember when I first went into Endenburg Electrotechnique many years ago, I was struck by how almost elegant the office was. And I realized it was because nobody had any papers piled up on their desk. And they weren't expecting me, and they weren't trying to impress anybody. They just had worked on their workflow so much that they didn't have a need to pile up paper. They knew what the workflows were, and they had optimized them. And I have seen that repeatedly now as organizations really start to incorporate this methodology. It's like it just goes easier because we've thought through and we have a process in place to be improving our systems. And it's interesting, when I was managing, I was in a big company and I couldn't bring in circle structures particularly, but I was able to use this workflow methodology to very quickly bring my organization to the point where we could get ISO 9000 certified. That's the international quality standard, which is usually a big pain in the neck, but with this method, it was easy. So it's very compatible with those proven quality methods.
One of the things that I see very valuable about the improvement of the work process is that when that is seen as successful, the opportunity to bring in additional changes, for example, the addition of the circle methodology, would be accepted more readily because it's already been proven that the changes in that direction are working. So new changes would be more readily accepted and facilitated more easily.
Yeah, small successes can breed big ones. Ooh. I stumble on my words there. Small successes can breed big ones.
Yes, I agree with that completely. Once you have established a series of successes, they tend to build on themselves, and people start to believe that successes are going to keep happening, and they'll make them happen, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right, right.
Should money be the only or best measurement for success of a system, or are there other ways to measure besides money?
Yeah, that's interesting. Money happens to be a pretty good meta measure or larger measure. The money should not be the reason you're in business. You should be in business to be serving a customer. That's the aim of your circles, is to serve customers. That's the aim of your organization. And you're exchanging with the customer, and you're exchanging in many ways. There's if somebody's coming into your store, people may feel good because people are friendly, and that's a kind of exchange. But money is a really common way of saying, hey, we're doing well. And it doesn't matter whether you're a for-profit or a non-profit organization, you still have to make a profit. A non-profit that doesn't make profit goes out of business because it's losing money. And the only difference is the money is not distributed to shareholders. So money is a kind of like, you know, you need to have your body at a certain temperature, and if it's not, then you're in big trouble. It may not be your favorite way of measuring your well-being, but it needs to be there. And money is one of those basic things that it can tell you very quickly whether you're working well or not. And it's interesting. I remember visiting Gerard Endenberg not too long ago. He since has retired from Endenberg Electrotechnique as part of his experiment. He wanted to see if managers other than him could run the company, and in fact, there have been through two managers now, and they're still operating sociocratically. So he doesn't have anything more to do with the company now, just to see what happens. And so I was visiting him, and I said, well, how is it going over there at the company? He said, oh, not well. And I said, uh-oh. You know, I just thought, uh-oh. I'm always pointing to people about this company working so well. I said, what's the problem? And he said, they are making too much money. And I said, why is that a problem? And he said, fat people are not healthy. He said, they should be cutting their prices. There's a recession coming, and they need to be socking away, you know, resources rather than trying to buy a lot of extra gear and all this sort of thing. He said they don't have a good measurement for how well they're doing because they're too fat. And so that really underscored for me what it means to have the attitude that we're in it, that money is in here as a measurement for us, the objective being to make a lot of money. So there are a lot of other measures. On a work process, that I gave the example of, say, are we doing the right thing by customers? Are we using the best system? Now, money was involved in that example, but it can be that people are saying the way you're having us fill out an order for our furniture was unfriendly, it was confusing. So that's feedback. That's very much a measurement. Your customer doesn't like that. So that's another way of measuring, and there's lots of non-monetary measures like that that you should be aware of in your system.
The very bottom line oriented management people will be asking, will this system result in a superior bottom line benefit? Will there be more dollars? Will there be more profit? Will it work in the real world to make the business stronger?
Yeah, it does. It's very difficult to prove that something you've done is the cause of profit, because there's so many intervening variables. You know, maybe the economy happens to be good right now, so you would have made money regardless of what you did. You can't really prove something. But over time, it seems like companies that are using this methodology are 30% more profitable, substantially more profitable. They're more resilient. They survive recessions. And so there really does seem to be a real-world hard bottom line reason to be doing this.
I see the engagement of the employees in the process as boosting performance by them being more engaged on the job and having their ideas heard, which makes them much more excited. We've all been in organizations where you've walked in the door and you can see the people look depressed, and you know that company's probably not doing very well, and you go in other ones where the employees are energized and excited,
right,
and that those companies are probably doing very well.
There's a dramatic example of that. A friend of mine is the president of a company, and he's happy to have me use the name Creative Urethanes. It's a little company over in Virginia, and if you've ever been on a skateboard, you've probably been on Creative Urethane skateboard wheels. They make production plastic like that, but they also make a lot of customized urethane parts. And they've done very well for a long time. And when the recent severe recession hit in the U.S., it hit the manufacturing industry severely and quickly. And he said within a month they had several phone calls that went something like, "Hi, we've been your customer for 15 years. You need to cancel our order because we're going out of business." And within a very short period of time, their business was more than halved, down by two-thirds. And my friend said he was despondent. He couldn't lead anymore. He just thought the company was going to fold, and he was sort of giving up. He was ready to give in. And the general circle happened. There's somebody called an emergency general circle meeting, and they just sort of brushed Richard aside and said, "Here's what we're going to do. We're going to have some layoffs, so we're going to look at the layoff. The unemployment insurance is just being another one of our assets. And by the way, you just had a baby, so it shouldn't be you. You go over here. You can tolerate it better than I can." And they just worked together to figure that out. And the company survived. And so literally everybody was primed to be able to work together. And it would not have survived without that ability because the leader was in such deep despond.
What's the first step toward utilizing the sociocratic principles in the workplace and in any community? What would be the first thing to do to get the process going?
Get training. And we have, if you go to a website, Sociocracy Consulting, www.sociocracyconsulting.com, look there, you'll see various trainings that we have coming. We just finished a workshop in Washington. We have another one coming up in Washington in June. There's some online classes you can see there. The one in June, I think, goes for 4 days starting on June 11th. And we have another one 2 weeks after that in Portland. And so there's a lot of things on that webpage that you can see. And it takes training. That's of all the problems with this system. The biggest problem is that it is not something you can just pick up. You do need training on it, and get training with a few people who can then work with an experienced person to plan how to start implementing in your organization. They'll be ahead of the game. When I work with people, I always have the people who've had the advanced training work with me inside the company so that I'm training them to train as we go. And that way they become self-sufficient pretty quickly. Get the training so you know what you're doing. Make sure that the top people are in on the training. It's in their favor as well as the workers' favor. And they need to be able to guide it, and they need to be able to understand that it's in their favor also. And that's the quick summary of it.
And what is next for John Buck?
I'm working on something called Collective Impact, particularly down in Asheville, North Carolina. Collective impact is a new term for organizing organizations, particularly nonprofits. And by organizing nonprofits, you can get much more effectiveness. You can leverage them. And we've particularly working hard down there to organize lots of different organizations around purposes like food, trying to solve some food problems. And there's a Handmade in America is leading a coalition to try to get the crafts in the Appalachian area sold better and organizing several people. So that's the exciting new thing for me, is organizing organizations.
And how can we find you on the Internet once again?
It's www.sociocracyconsulting. It's sociocracyconsulting.com. And send us a contact email if you want, or I think there's a phone number there also you can call. We'd love to hear from you.
Well, that's great. And thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us tonight, John. It's been fascinating talking about this intriguing process and these revolutionary new ideas.
I appreciate your interest, and thank you for the nice book review that you gave. That was, I felt very very flattered by your comments.
Oh, you're very welcome. And thanks to everyone for tuning in to this edition of Blog Business Success here on Blog Talk Radio. And tonight our guest was John Buck, and he's a dynamic self-governance expert. He's the CEO of the Sociocracy Consulting Group, and he's an associate at Creative Learning Solutions. And he's also the co-author of the very hands-on and results-oriented book, We the People, Consenting to a Deeper Democracy, a Guide to Sociocratic Principles and Methods. And John Buck described the concept of dynamic self-governance for any workplace, government, or organization. Thanks again for joining us, John.
Thank you very much, Wayne.
Oh, you're very welcome. And thanks to everyone for tuning in. Good night.